Matter of State versus Jewel Hanna. Can we please have appearances of counsel? Welcome, counsel. Ms. Thiel. I should tell everyone we're going to take a break at around 12:30. I'm optimistic we will finish the first part of the argument before then. Please
I'll
go ahead.
I'll talk fast. Good morning, Your Honors. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
That's fine.
May it please the court. As the vast majority of state and federal courts across the country who have addressed this issue have recognized, reading the contents of a defendant's phone records to the jury requires nothing more than knowing the meaning of the abbreviations, and thus is a non-expert's recitation of business records. These courts have held that if a witness simply conveys factual information contained in phone records using a process of reasoning familiar in everyday life, such as plotting data points on a map, that testimony may be offered by a lay witness. Expert testimony is only required if the witness attempts to pinpoint the precise location of the defendant's phone within a small geographic area, or explains why a cell phone would have connected to a specific cell tower over another, or opines to the range of that tower. The appellate division's opinion in this case splits from that consensus understanding by misconstruing Detective Lehman's testimony. The panel held that Lehman's testimony about the locations of the towers defendant's phone connected to meant he was opining in all but explicit words about the location of defendant's phone, thus requiring expertise. But this is simply not true. Lehman's testimony required no specialized or expert knowledge, as defendant acknowledged when he signed the consent agreement, permitting Lehman to provide, quote, lay witness testimony regarding his review, interpretation, and plotting of the location of cell towers on a map from defendant's historical cell site data records, end quote. And Lehman did just that. He testified from defendant's phone records about the location of 10 towers that 16 of defendant's phone calls connected to, and then plotted those towers on a map, creating a pattern showing the general direction the phone was likely traveling on the morning of the murder. He did not testify about the location of defendant or defendant's phone. He did not outline why defendant's phone would have connected to one tower over another, or testify about which tower had the strongest signal, or explain the coverage range for any tower. The state thus asks this court to adopt the approach taken by the majority of courts that differentiate between lay and expert witness testimony about cell towers, and determine Lehman here provided appropriate lay witness testimony. And this court should find the jury was permitted to use its common sense and experience to draw reasonable inferences from this testimony. For these reasons and the others outlined in the state's brief, the ruling of the appellate division should be reversed. I welcome the court's question as I turn to the substantive portion of my argument.
Didn't you convey more than the location of the tower to the jury? I thought the state asked the jury to infer that the phone was close to the towers that it connected to, based on its position that this was a matter of common sense.
It did, because it is a matter of common sense that you have to be close to a tower to connect to it, or close enough to a tower to connect to it.
But how close depends on a number of factors. Proximity is only one. Bernie identified multiple other factors. Isn't
correct.
That correct?
Absolutely.
And here, the prosecutor stood up in front of the jury and talked about how close the phone was, saying it was a stone's throw away, saying it was approximately a mile, if not a mile and a half away.
The tower was that far away, not necessarily the phone. There is one reference.
Phone, quote, the phone has to be close to the tower that's being accessed. I'd say it's a stone's throw. Approximately a mile, if not a mile and a half. The phone is what was being argued. Was there sufficient support for that statement based on the court's decision in Bernie?
Well, yes, but I would like to answer your question in two parts. The first part is that statement was made in the closing, where she was saying you have several points of confirmation that defendant was close by. You have the fact that his motor vehicle was in the accident. He was charged with this motor vehicle accident. He went up to somebody, a bald man with a limp, asked for a ride to Bridgeton. Oh, and also his phone hit off this tower that was a mile and a half away. So she's saying that we know defendant is there for all of these reasons. One of them is that his cell phone was hitting off a nearby tower.
Was that appropriate?
It was. That was the state's theory of the case, that the defendant was in the car with the victim at the same time.
Not the theory. Was that argument appropriate in light of the guidance that the court had given in Bernie?
Could it have been clearer if she had said close enough to the tower to connect to it? Sure. But
was there any objection? So I thought that the only thing that was challenged was Lehman's testimony, not the prosecutor's closing statement.
Correct.
Was there an objection to the prosecutor's statement at trial?
On appeal, there was, but not in the closing itself. At the end of the closing, the defense counsel again raised the objection to the use of Lehman's testimony, saying that she believed it had gone far beyond their consent order.
Sorry, can you say it one more time? The defense argued that Lehman's testimony itself was beyond the consent order, or
correct,
that the state's closing was inappropriate. That's what I'm asking.
They had argued Lehman's testimony itself was inappropriate. But at the end of the closing, that was kind of brought up again. It was brought up in the motion for a new trial. It was wrapped up. She had said she didn't want to object during the closing itself.
So you said earlier that none of the testimony indicated the location of the defendant or the defendant's phone. But in providing testimony with regard to the cell towers, without an explanation to the jury of how cell towers work or how cell towers interact with cell phones, Lehman did provide some testimony, at least initially, with regard to the previous suspect regarding where that individual and that individual's phone would have been located. In his testimony on page 21 of 8T, the prosecutor asked, and would those phone records have provided information regarding where Mr. Moore may have been located at the time of the homicide? Yes, regarding cell phone records. So that testimony came before the testimony specifically with regard to the defendant. And as a jury, hearing only what you categorize as facts, is hearing from the witness that cell phone records are placing an individual and its phone in a particular location. How is that not what happened with that testimony?
Because it depends on how the state is using that cell tower location information. If they are just trying to say that somebody is in a general area, Newark, where Gary Moore was, which is why they could exclude this other suspect from this homicide case, that's far different than saying he was in this triangular area. We can put him between Main Street and 4th Street in Newark. It's very different. That range of the tower is merely showing he is not by the scene of the homicide. It's not attempting to pinpoint where Gary Moore phones was located.
But it is telling the jury that cell tower connection equals location of a phone.
General location, yes. That's very clear in the case law. Bernie says that ample federal and state case law says that in the trial itself, Lehman said that during his...
You said something earlier that that Lehman didn't testify with regard to precise location.
Correct.
Isn't it the case that cell site location data isn't precise anyway? Even if someone, a witness, is qualified as an expert, they also cannot testify to precise location because cell site location data is not precise. Correct?
More precise, though. A tower range?
Not GPS.
Correct.
GPS,
it is
location.
Far less precise.
And we said that in Bernie.
Correct.
We even said that in Bernie.
Absolutely.
Cell site location data is not precise, period.
It's less precise. You can put it to a pie-shaped wedge as opposed to the whole pie. So it's not as precise as saying he was on floor 2 of this building, but it is triangulating his position to a much more precise area as opposed to the general tower connection, which still means something. We know that by connecting to that tower, he was close enough to connect to that tower.
Did the jury know the range of the coverage area of the tower?
No, that was part of what Lehman was not permitted to testify to. He was not permitted to testify to angle or azimuth or range of towers or anything along those lines that he would need to be qualified as an expert to get into.
Should the jury have that information? Because it seems as though the state's position is a witness should be able to testify to the what, but not the why and the how that explains the conclusion that a phone connected to a cell tower. And normally, if there was an expert on the stand that only testified to the conclusion that a phone was here and it connected to a cell tower, that is a net opinion. That's kind of the definition of a net opinion, providing a conclusion, providing a fact without the where or the wherefore. So it seems as though the state is asking to be able to label a witness, a lay witness, to provide testimony regarding a conclusion about highly technical area and bypass the net opinion rule because it's not an expert. How do you respond to that?
The state was asking Lehman to plot the location of the towers and then asking the jury to draw inferences from those towers. Right. But that's what inferences are.
So the witness is giving the conclusion that, giving a fact that the cell tower was in this location and this phone pinged off of that cell tower.
Correct.
Without any context whatsoever as to why and how that happens and why that matters.
Correct.
So is that similar to a net opinion? If an expert got on the stand and provided that sort of testimony, that would be a violation of the net opinion rule. Don't you agree?
It would only be a net opinion similar to what happened in Bernie if what he was basing his opinion on wasn't scientifically reliable or established enough.
Was that it would only be a net opinion violation if it was an opinion. Here he's only testifying to a precise fact that is factually true, that this cell phone tower was connected to. That is it.
Correct.
No explanation that an opinion is someone's view of the importance of a particular fact. A fact that is identifiably true is not an opinion, it's a fact.
Correct. And asking the jury to draw an inference from that fact wouldn't violate the net opinion rule because we're not in the opinion category. If an expert got up and said that exact same thing, perhaps it would be a net opinion as what happened in Bernie.
Both sides want jurors to draw reasonable inferences from the facts.
Correct.
The ACLU tells us that the coverage range is 20 miles. Is that an important fact for jurors to know what the coverage range is so that their inferences are reasonable ones?
No, only because the state wasn't relying on any specific connection. It was the pattern of these 16 calls connecting to 10 different towers in the exact same pattern that the victim was traveling. We weren't pointing at call number 3 and say, look, he obviously was near this tower because that's where his phone connected. It was the pattern that was created that followed the same path the victim was taken.
The prosecutor literally asked the jury to infer that the phone was close to the tower. Were you suggesting that if the range was indeed, do you agree that the range is 20 miles?
No, we do not.
Benefit from knowing what the range is in order to be able to make the inferences you're asking?
It would not be important what the range was because the state was pointing to that pattern. It wouldn't matter if the range was 20 miles or 2 miles, which again, in urban areas, it's not going to be 20 miles.
How far were the towers, the location of the towers from one another?
From one another or from the location of where the victim's vehicle was seen?
From one another.
Several miles. There's calls 3, 4, 5, and 6. Jump back and forth between two towers within the span of 4 minutes, and they're about 5 miles apart.
And you've explained to us that the point was to demonstrate the travel path.
Correct.
Of the vehicle. If the ACLU's information is correct that it's a 20-mile range, does that undermine what was being argued to the jury? And if so, I come back to whether it's important for the jury to have an understanding of the range of coverage, please.
I may have misanswered your prior question then. The total range of all 10 towers was beyond 20 miles. So in referencing the 5 miles that jumped back and forth between the towers, that was 5 miles, but the range of all 10 towers exceeded 20 miles. So in that way, even if the towers had a range of 20 miles, which they do not.
Sorry, I thought the ACLU was arguing that the range of each tower is 20 miles. Not all of them. You're saying there's 10 towers altogether, right?
Correct.
I thought the argument was the range of each tower could be up to 20 miles, not the range of many towers altogether could
absolutely
be.
Absolutely. I guess the state's point was, even if a tower's coverage range, the first tower and the last tower would be the ones you would look at then, they are further than 20 miles apart. So a phone would not hit where it did in Bridgeton if they were farther than 20 miles away in Monroe Township. So the range of those cell phones didn't matter. And also defendant implicitly acknowledged this theory during the case in chief by saying several things. First, that it was plausible that the victim gave defendant a ride home and that defendant was then dropped off at his house. So although they are very vehemently arguing that these cell phones were improperly admitted, they embraced part of the theory that these cell phone tower records showed. Additionally,
question on your range theory. So you have, I don't know the numbers exactly, but you have call one from something near Monroe, is that correct?
Correct.
And then I assume that by calls four and five, Monroe is no longer, it's not pinging the cell tower in Monroe.
Correct.
So your theory would be in part, or the theory that you wanted to, you were seeking to present to the jury and did present, is that when you follow the pattern of what cell towers are connecting and what cell towers are not, you're losing some of the ones that are closer to Monroe, and over time you're gaining access or sufficient proximity, whatever it may be, to cell towers that are closer to Bridgeton.
Correct.
So is it your position, so you've argued that the general location or the more precise location of the phone in relation to the cell tower doesn't matter in this case because the state was presenting a theory to the jury with regard to the travel path of the defendant's phone in relation to the victim's travel path. So is it the state's position that a determination of whether a lay witness can testify about cell tower connection is made on a case-by-case basis depending on the state's theory of the case? If the state's theory of the case involves more precise location that the state wants to present than an expert's needed, what is the state's position?
Exactly that. That if the state wants to triangulate that cell phone's location, or really even say the cell phone's location in anything more than we think it was in Trenton, an expert would be needed for that. But just giving the location of why?
Why? Because in that scenario, the same facts can still be presented. The cell site data, the call detail records are the same. So a lay witness, under your theory, could presumably still get on the stand and testify to, here's the cell tower, and here's the cell phone pinging off the cell tower.
Yes, and a lay witness could do that. But if the state was then going to get up and use that information to say, that's showing you what it's showing you because the phone was here, then that expert would need to be a witness. It depends on how the state is using it. If the state is—
Similar to the arguments made in closing here.
Similar to, but not the same. Because the state here wasn't saying any particular location meant the phone was there. It was saying, look at this pattern. And if you wanted to, I guess, extrapolate, defense counsel also said that. One of her statements was that his calls after the homicide puts him connecting to Tower 37, which, quote, puts him at his home on 25, his address. So again, part of that is embracing this theory that cell tower locations mean something, because if you connect to Tower 37 and that puts him near his address, implicit in that is the acknowledgement that a cell tower connection puts you in proximity to that tower. What the proximity is may or may not matter depending on the case.
So when you answered the Chief Justice's question before, that the state was asking the jury to draw inferences, can you just describe me what exact inference was the state asking the jury to draw? What inference did the state seek for the jury to draw?
The state was asking the jury to conclude, based on the cell tower evidence and the other evidence in this case, that defendant was likely in the vehicle with the victim. That was the theory.
And one of the limiting instructions, the judge said, you may not use location of cell phone tower to determine location of phone, making the phone, which I think is probably phone call, connected to the tower. You may not use location of cell phone tower to determine location of phone. How is that consistent with the inference that the state is asking the jury to draw?
That instruction evolved over time, I would say. That is one of his first instructions. There's instructions on that phone location in 18, 90, and 11T. And the instruction that was given in 90 was the one that the state and defense counsel agreed to together and presented together.
Is the instruction in 90?
That was 90?
Yes.
as 9T went on, and then in 11T in the actual jury charge itself before deliberation, that was, you may not consider tower location to determine a phone's location, but you may consider it in conjunction with other evidence. So it...
To determine a phone's location?
You may consider the evidence presented in conjunction. He did not say what he could use it for.
So the, I read that. And so what that seems to me to say is you can't use the tower to determine location, but you can use the tower in part to determine location. Don't you think that would have confused the jury? And at the same time, don't you think that would have empowered or enabled the jury to come up with an inference that is undisciplined and unchecked because there is no expert testimony on location?
It would not allow a jury to infer something it should not have. That's what inferences are. Inferences are drawing conclusions that are reasonable. It happens constantly in trials. That's what circumstantial evidence is.
How are we checking the reasonableness of that inference if there is no expert testify on location, and the judge has said you may not use a tower to determine location, and you may use a tower to determine location? In light of the contradictory confusion, potentially, of that explanation, who's checking the inference that the jury is drawing?
That's why I think the judge's latter instructions are so important, because he combined it with, you cannot use this to determine phone location, but you may consider it in conjunction with other evidence.
To determine phone location.
But he didn't say that part, and I think that would be a crucial piece. He's not saying you can infer location from this tower connection. That also was not what the state was asking. The state was saying, look at this pattern. Look at these 16 calls. Not look at this one call. Not determine that he was by the homicide because he connected to Tower 37. Look at the pattern that was created, and that's why we think he was in the vehicle with the victim. So it's the inferences drawn from all of the calls that made a difference, and in conjunction with the other evidence. If this was the only evidence in this case, that would be a different story. But this was just one piece of the corroborating evidence presented by the state in this case. There was DNA from the defendant in the victim's car, despite the fact that he said that he didn't know the victim and had never been in his car. There were victims at both ends, both at the scene of the homicide and at Monroe Township, where defendant crashed his car, saying a bald man with a limp approached me.
Are you making a harmless error argument?
It's certainly harmless error in relation to the other evidence that was in this case, yes. But overall, the judge's instructions reined in that inference that the jury was being asked to make by saying you may consider it when you consider the other evidence, because that is what makes an inference. It has to be reasonable.
You may consider it for what purpose? When you consider the other evidence, you may consider cell tower location for what purpose?
I don't know that that's the judge's place to say what they can consider it for.
So the judge says on one end, you can't consider it for location. And on another end, you may consider it, but never says what you can consider it for. You don't find that trouble?
That's why I think the prior instructions got clearer as the instructions evolved. And that's why there were so many instructions on this cell phone. And the latter ones, the ones specifically in the jury charge, were the clearest, and the ones given to the jury that said, you may consider it in conjunction. He didn't say what for. I don't know that that would be his place to say what they should consider it for.
There's no purpose for it. Then why would it have come in even in the first place?
There is a purpose for it.
What is that purpose?
The purpose is to show that it was the state's theory was more likely true. It supports the state's theory.
Of location.
Of the path of travel that the defendant took on the morning of the vehicle.
Based on location.
Correct, yes, but the general location. If the cell phone was actually...
location is general location based on the location of the cell tower. Well, correct? But
case law doesn't see it that way. Case law differentiates between general vicinity of a cell phone based on tower location and precise location. That's why a lot of...
on GPS location.
GPS location absolutely is far more precise, but...
It is precise. Precise is exactly the location of a cell phone. That is precise.
Correct.
Cell site location data is not precise. I know you want us to say not as precise, but it is not precise.
I have to go back to it. It's less precise. I mean, a tower connection gives you the general vicinity of that tower and the range of that tower. But if you have an
expert, sorry, because you would argue that there are experts who could testify to a particular wedge that they draw on a map and say, because in this circumstance, I have investigated this cell tower by driving through using engineering, through figuring out what other cell phone tower was down at that particular time and which one wasn't, and through the azimuth and all the other particulars, I can say that the defendant's phone was someplace within this wedge.
Correct. Or range. The wedge of a pie or a slice of a pie compared to the pie.
Which could be any number of miles.
Correct. It certainly depends on the state, the city. If you're in Montana, it's absolutely going to be different than if you're in Bridgeton.
You keep talking about the path of travel, but the ultimate conclusion you were hoping the jury would reach was that the defendant was in fact in the car with the victim at the end of the path, correct?
That's what the state was hoping, yes.
Right. So weren't you trying to define that location very specifically in the end and hoping the jury would draw that conclusion as it related to a particular tower?
Because that's what the pattern showed, not because he connected to Tower 37 at the time of the homicide. The state didn't point to any connection and say he had to be within 2 miles, 1 mile of the homicide because of this connection. It said, look, we think he was in the vehicle because of this pattern that was created by the connections. And again, like defense counsel said, his connection to Tower 37 put defendant at his address. So implicit in defendant's understanding of cell tower connections is that it means something, and it can put you, however precise you want to be, it can put you at a location.
But because you had a location that was definitive based on where the victim's car was located, you were trying to draw a connection between that cell tower and that location. So you had precise location as a result of the cell coverage. So you were trying to get the jury to make that leap. It wasn't an inference that they could draw on their own. That was ultimately what you were hoping they would have to find.
They could have drawn it even without the cell tower connections, because that last connection to Tower 37 was also by defendant's home. So it was by the scene of the homicide and defendant's home. So that last connection didn't mean much. It could have meant he was home at that point. And that's what defense counsel was trying to elicit.
That except you had a witness testifying that they saw someone with a particular limp, and you had video of someone with a particular limp, and you had defendant's DNA in the car. So it certainly wasn't that you're trying to prove the defendant was in the car based only on this, or even based largely on this.
Correct, Your Honor.
Counsel, we appreciate that no party in a case, civil or criminal, wants to be required to put on evidence that they believe they don't have to. Put that to one side for a moment. Is there a reason not for the state not to call experts in these situations?
Depending on the case, it could be numerous reasons. Experts, if you're going to call, for example, the custodian of records, that's going to be a lot harder to get. It's probably going to require an out-of-state subpoena, as opposed to a detective in your office who is much more readily available. And as court schedules changed, is more flexible in their availability as opposed to an expert.
The custodian of records. You need a witness with expertise who can be qualified as an expert to testify about what the records say. So is there a reason for any potential reluctance on the state's part to present these witnesses?
I don't know that the courts that have addressed this issue have found that you have to be qualified as an expert to testify to cell phone records. 20 of the 21 states who have addressed this issue have recognized that lay witnesses may read from cell phone records about tower locations. They have differentiated, they've called it a dichotomy, or a growing majority have recognized this split. And that's what the state is asking this court to do now, is follow the path of the 20 courts out of the 21 that have recognized this dichotomy between what lay witnesses can testify from cell phone records about cell tower locations and what experts need to testify to, the how, why, and where.
Leaving aside for the moment this case in which there was a lay witness presented, not an expert witness, what would an expert witness provide in terms of the inference that you want the jury to draw that a lay witness, as limited in this case, can't provide?
They can narrow the area where the cell phone could have been located, but it would still be imprecise. It's not GPS location. It is a more precise slice of that pie, but it is still only a slice of the pie. So the state would still be asking the jury to draw inferences from those expert testimony.
But using your series of calls that mm-hmm. is the heart of the case here, wouldn't expert testimony allow you, I don't know if it's pie wedges or whatever it might be, there'd be some sort of graphic, no doubt used by the expert, to plot a range of potential location on a graph and show the travel in a way that this witness, by virtue of the fact that he is a lay witness and doesn't have the expertise to explain that, just simply can't do?
Yes, but that also opens the expert up to additional, I guess, limitations that the lay witness does not. Because the expert is presenting as an expert, there's an instruction that you don't have to accept this expert testimony, but you shouldn't give it any more weight than, like, experts come
with. That's something that lawyers confront all the time.
Absolutely.
And I think the response is you put on an expert who's going to be effective and qualified and present the testimony in a precise way that the jury can understand. And the jury will perhaps think, the judge said I don't have to consider every expert as right, but this one I think is right because the testimony all fits together. So my simple question to you, I know it's hard to speak for all the lawyers out there who are trying these cases, but why not present to a jury the most precise and effective evidence in cases in which location is important, subject to the limits of the technology? Obviously, the expert's not going to make it up. It's going to be subject to the limits of the technology, but may be much more persuasive in terms of asking the jury to draw that inference.
I think may be more persuasive or perhaps better is absolutely true. An expert could have gotten up there and done this with more precision, but that doesn't mean that an expert was legally required. And I think that's the difference in this case, is that while it may have been better to present this testimony as expert testimony, it wasn't required. As the 20 of the 21 courts have recognized, lay witnesses may present this tower location testimony. It is more precise when an expert explains the how, why, and where that goes with it, but they still may testify as to the tower locations, and then the jury can draw reasonable inferences from that.
And so I think you've argued that the cross-examination is sufficient with regard to this lay witness, and here that even elicited some concessions from Detective Lehman, including the fact that that the phone connects to is not always necessarily the tower that is closest to the actual phone.
Correct.
What is a jury supposed to do with that information without an understanding of how cell towers work? A jury is presented the information on direct examination from Detective Lehman about, well, here's this path and here's what's happening. And then on cross, he says, oh yeah, cell phones don't always connect to the towers that are closest. What is the jury, what does that matter if that's elicited on cross-examination, if the jury doesn't even have a base of understanding with regard to the technical aspects of cell towers connecting to cell phones and the ranges, and that the range might be 20 miles in either direction from any of those towers that could have resulted in a completely different path?
I would like to answer your question in two parts. First, I think that goes to the weight and not the admissibility. So if the jury received evidence that it was a 20-mile range and that's the best that they could do, then that's very much going to affect the weight of that evidence.
Well, but they didn't, right? So they didn't get any information on the range at all.
Correct.
So let's stick to what happened here. They didn't get any information on ranges, direction, azimuth, none of that here. Here was a cell tower. Here's where the phone pinged. And yes, by the way, cell phones don't always connect to the closest cell tower.
And that's the...
How does that aid the jury when the jury possibly has no understanding of what in the world that means?
That's the second part of the answer, is that I think jurors understand this. In a decade ago, when there were 70 million more cell phone accounts than people in this country, people understand cell phones. They might not
understand. Basing that on, because I think I know a few people that might not understand cell phones. I really would like to know, because I'm not so sure.
United States Supreme Court in Carpenter. Oh wait, are you talking about the number of cell phones or how much people understand them?
The fact that the general public has this very technical understanding of the fact that if you're in one location, there's a cell tower here, there's a cell tower there. I want to know what you're basing that on, because again, I think differently.
The quote from Baker, 496 Fed Appendix at 204, says, any cell phone user of average intelligence would be able to understand that the strength of one's cell phone reception depends largely on one's proximity to the cell phone tower.
That's what that opinion says, but I'm not sure if every juror has that understanding.
Correct, and there's always going to be exceptions as to what jurors may or may not know, but the common or average juror would likely understand what cell phone towers do. If you want to make it more personal, look at Wi-Fi connections. You might not know how far your Wi-Fi, you know, router gets you, but you know if you go to the corner, you're not going to get it. So you might not know the exact coverage, but you know what that coverage means when you have it.
Okay, so I wonder what the state's position is with regard to cases that don't involve cell site location data. So in other cases where it's probably usually the case, the state presents an expert. Where would, you know, a holding that you're arguing for go? What are the bounds with regard to highly technical or scientific testimony? What are the bounds? It's in every case you determine how the state is using that testimony, because there are a lot of areas that one could assume jurors have an understanding of the area. DNA analysis, for example. I think a lot of the general public have a very good understanding of, you could possibly get a DNA match by samples, but don't have a specific understanding of the scientific aspects. But it's usually the case that an expert testifies with regard to DNA testing analysis, correct?
Correct.
So why, you know, could the state put a lay witness on to just read a result and state, this DNA test was a match, period, without talking about probabilities, without talking about the fact that matches are never 100% and why that is, and not going into the scientific details, because most people understand DNA matches. Would a lay witness be able to just say, well, we ran a test was run and there's a match?
I don't think you would be able to get a lay witness who would be able to introduce those results in the first place. So that might make it more difficult too.
Would you need to qualify the scientist as an expert? Would you need to? Or just put them on the stand to say, we did a test and there was a match. Done. Without going into the science of DNA analysis, because that's usually not done.
I think it depends on, again, what the state intended to use it for. If they were only trying to show that it was a male that this DNA matched to, and that's what the lay witness got up there and said, this DNA showed it came from a male,
with no explanation of how the science points in that direction at all to give the jury context.
Perhaps.
How do you cross-examine that witness?
Well,
that lay witness.
You elicit the limitations of that. So you're saying it's male only, that limits it to 400 million people in America and Canada. That's the limitations. It's like the limitations that were addressed in Hill.
Let me ask it differently.
Yes.
How do you cross-examine to challenge the conclusion through a lay witness?
Well, I don't know that necessarily a lay witness could do DNA at all, even if they were just saying it was a male. But using the hypothetical that I was given, that was the most lay appropriate I could think of to get a DNA witness in there.
So isn't there a separate issue? So in this case, there was no, I guess I'm not sure. Was there any objection to admission of the cell phone records themselves? Forget about Lehman's testimony about it. Admission of the cell phone records themselves.
No, they were stipulated in evidence as business records.
Okay, so then in theory, the prosecutor could have gone through Lehman's entire testimony, but using the records and pointing the jury to particular parts of them during closing, correct? Even had Lehman not testified, the prosecutor could have said, okay, you all have the records, turn to page one, do you see this abbreviation? That means that this is about a cell tower. Now turn to this cell tower. Now go to this other page where it says where this cell tower is. All of that in theory could have happened.
Correct.
In a case where you're talking about a DNA test, wouldn't there be a confrontation clause objection or some kind of objection to the actual test that says this is a match being admitted into evidence?
Absolutely.
But again, if the scientist is the one on the stand, then you just don't qualify them as an expert.
I don't know that they could get into any conclusions, though. If they're not qualified as an expert and are simply saying, these are the results I was given.
The test just couldn't come in at all, whereas here the phone records could come in.
Correct.
I thought is the difference.
Absolutely.
Because there was no objection to the phone records.
Correct. They were stipulated to.
So could the prosecutor then say, here's a map that covers Monroe, Bridgeton, and this cell tower that you find on Exhibit X is right here, and then this next one is right here, and then the winding road is obvious to the jury. Is that something that could be done with these cell records?
Yes, and that's what was done. During Lehman's testimony, they created this map of towers.
But they could have done it without Lehman and just with the phone records, since there was no objection to the admission of the phone records, correct?
Correct.
And the information is on all the phone records. It's just you have to flip a lot of different pages. And first you have to look here, then you have to look here, and then you have to look there.
You have to do a lot of cross-referencing to elicit what Lehman was able to very effectively summarize.
But isn't that the point? If you had done that and walked through with the jurors during summation, each one of those points by map, the jurors would have to come to all of those conclusions and figure out what the inferences were that they were hoping to draw. Whereas with Lehman, you sort of cut to the chase and said, this is the inference we want you to draw. And this witness with the state's imprimatur is now testifying to the fact of a certain location. So aren't you going a bit beyond just describing facts in a more convenient way and efficient way? You're really going one step beyond, and it's like Lehman is testifying to a conclusion that didn't have all of the support necessary.
Well, Lehman himself never gave any opinions. In the closing, the state said, please use this evidence from Lehman's testimony to infer this, because that was their theory. That's what states all the time and defense counsels all the time present a theory that may be based entirely on circumstantial evidence. Would it be better to have an expert and have more or less direct evidence of that cell phone location? Absolutely. Instead, we had a lay witness, and the state was therefore asking the jury to infer it. But the jury might have chosen not to infer it. So by not presenting an expert, that was the state's choice to proceed that way. May it have been better a different way? Sure. But that doesn't mean it was legally insufficient to do it the way they did it here. Additionally, Your Honors, again, defendants' rights were amply protected in this case. They stipulated to the admission of the business records. They had over 100 pages of cross-examination for Detective Lehman. He admitted the tower location only gives you an approximate location, a statement defense counsel did not object to. He said, I can't tell you the location of the phone. I can't tell you that it connects to the closest tower. He made all of these concessions during cross-examination that show why he was a lay witness and not an expert. He, by himself, had to concede the imprecision of his testimony. So that is why the state is asking this court to rule like the 20 of the 21 other jurisdictions who have determined this issue have ruled and recognize this dichotomy, that while it may be better to do it one way or another, that doesn't mean it's legally insufficient to do it the way that was done here.
And on that point, if you could just briefly tell us what's wrong with the reasoning of the Maryland judges who considered this issue.
First, they're older cases. One was 2010, one was 2014. So they're over a decade ago, and cell phone technology has evolved. Now, granted, some of the 20 that I guess go in the state's favor in this case are from around 2014. I think there's a 2013, but there are a lot more modern cases as well. So in that way, it's different as well, because technology itself has evolved and our understanding of cell phone technology has evolved. Second, even the language that Maryland uses in these cases, they say specifically, like, Maryland, see if I have the language, a non-expert witness will rarely be used except in exceptional circumstances. So they already kind of lay the groundwork that they simply proceed differently at trial, that they seem to require experts for more than New Jersey does. So in that way, even procedurally, Maryland seems like an outlier. And that's why even the courts that have touched on this issue have acknowledged Wilder and Payne, which are the Maryland cases, and said, like, we don't think that's applicable. They, you know, can follow the procedure that they need to, but we don't believe that's accurate. So the state is asking this court to follow those other 20 jurisdictions instead of Maryland and recognize that dichotomy between lay witness testimony about cell towers and expert testimony about cell towers and the how, why, and where of them.
Other questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add? It looks like you've folded, and I accept that. And we will take a 30-minute recess for lunch.
Thank you, Your Honor.